Joining us on the program, our good friend from London, Ontario, nutritional consultant Pam Colleen. How are you?
I'm great, Tom. How are you doing today?
I am excellent.
Good stuff.
Today we are talking about someone you reference often. So let me get a quick history in terms of, oftentimes you talk about Weston A. Price. Well, you know, Tom, according to Weston A. Price, who the heck is Weston A. Price?
Well, it is. It's one of my favorite subjects. And the reason why I appreciate his work so much is because so many people out there are confused about the nutritional information that they're hearing. And, you know, they turn off the TV, they close the newspapers or the magazines, and they're scratching their head because they see all this contradictory information. And they really are basically throwing up their hands saying, "What now? What do I eat?" Because one day eggs are good for you, the next day eggs are bad for you, for example. So I like the work of Dr. Weston A. Price because he consolidated the information so that we can learn from history to see if dietary advice actually renders a healthy population. And by that, I mean we have to watch for at least five criteria. We have to see if the nutritional information can sustain a culture in terms of their mental health, their physical health, whether or not there's any issues with regards to fertility, healthy babies should be healthy, the senior citizens should be healthy, and they should also be productive members of society. And what Dr. Price observed in his travels back in the 1930s, by the way, is he studied primitive cultures and he studied their diets. And in healthy cultures, those are the cultures that interested him the most. In these healthy cultures, he examined their diet to see why it is that these people were so incredibly healthy, why he didn't see diseases like cancer, heart disease, diabetes, mental disorders, why he didn't see issues like problems with fertility, and so on. So he really focused a lot of his time and attention on studying the foods that these people were eating. And there's a summary that if we have time, we can go over. But the summary of his work basically shows all of the characteristics of a healthy diet based on these very primitive cultures. And these primitive cultures, of course, one unique characteristic of all of these healthy cultures is that they were not eating westernized, industrialized foods. They were eating the foods that were local and traditional to them.
And the reason why, and I know he's from the 30s, and oftentimes we look at research like, oh, we've got so much further ahead. I mean, from the 30s, I mean, Pam, we're going back 75, 80 years to go back from the 30s. But why do you consider it still valid then?
Because this is a food supply. These traditional cultures had a food supply that was untainted by Western man. And as soon as we've seen the rise of industrialized foods here in North America and other parts of the world, this is where we see a decline in our physical and mental health. So as we've been spending more time in the middle aisles of a grocery store, we are sicker, fatter, more depressed than ever before in the history of mankind. In the 1930s, there were still cultures in the world that were not influenced by westernized man. So Dr. Price could find these very primitive areas of the world and see the benefits of what nutritional wisdom will render. We have lost nutritional wisdom here in North America. And because we have lost nutritional wisdom, we are incredibly sick for it. And we're seeing our continent, essentially, you know, just not just Ontario, but all of Canada and the United States, we're basically going bankrupt because we are getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And I think to solve this problem, we have to get back to basics with our diet and learn from successful people who knew how to be healthy just from picking the right foods.
All right, so let's start. Let me throw a curveball at you then. I mean, if we had to go back in the 30s to find, or if Weston Price in the 30s, you know, found primitive cultures that had not been influenced, even back then, I mean, we saw, modern influences on the diet. But they were primitive, though.
Extremely primitive. He could compare, you know, and that's a good point, Tom, because he did find cultures where they had lost their wisdom and they had started integrating white bread, sugar, margarine, canned foods into the diet, these industrialized foods. So he was able to compare the healthy people who had not strayed from their traditional diet to the people who had started integrating westernized foods into their diet. And what did he see? Well, it shouldn't be any surprise, really. The people who were starting to eat the industrialized foods, these are the cultures where he started to see the signs of cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and so on.
All right, so let's start. There's a number of things to go over. So let's start number, what are some of the principles he sees in healthy diets from traditional diets? And not because he examined cultures, how many, did he examine cultures from all different areas, all different continents?
He traveled all over the world. So he studied cultures in North America. He studied cultures in Europe. He studied cultures in the South Pacific and even in South America. So he covered the continent looking at the characteristics of a healthy diet. The characteristics are summarized on the Weston A. Price website, but we can certainly talk about a few of them today. And one of the primary observations that he made was that these healthy cultures, their diets contained adequate amounts of the fat-soluble vitamins. And those are vitamins like vitamin A and vitamin D. So these are the nutrients that are found in animal foods. So in other words, these healthy cultures were getting adequate amounts of animal fat and animal protein in the diet. And when you compare the healthy cultures who were getting adequate amounts of animal fat and animal protein in the diet, and then you see that the cultures where they were getting the displacing foods, the industrialized foods, they were getting very small amounts of the fat-soluble vitamins in the diet. And that's when you started to see illness integrated into the culture. So probably the most important observation he made was around this issue about getting enough of the fat-soluble vitamins in the diet. So that's why, you know, when you look at Europeans, for example, I'm European, you're European descent, our ancestors actually got about 70% of their calories from animal fat. And today, of course, our dietary dictocrats are telling us to eat even less than 10% of our calories from animal fat, which is absurd because as we have been reducing our consumption of animal fat in the diet, we keep getting sicker and sicker and sicker. So we all need to learn from history.
45 minutes after 11 o'clock, nutritional consultant Pam Killeen joining us on the program. We'll come back and we'll talk about some of the characteristics of traditional diets, according to Weston A. Price, you know, who did this research back in the 30s. But and again, it's not one specific culture, but the overriding principle that all primitive cultures seem to embrace in terms of their diet. So we'll come back, talk to Pam a little bit more about some of those key characteristics next on 610 CKTB. Pam Killeen joining us on the program, nutritional consultant. Weston A. Price, who you often quote. And here's an interesting text from Jim and Thorold. Pam and Mr. Price, you don't know where you're going if you don't know where you've been. And it's like, wow, that's pretty interesting. So we talked about the amount of fat-soluble vitamins, specifically vitamin A, vitamin D, and he also didn't have a name for it, but now it's also believed to be vitamin K2.
Yeah, vitamin K2 to help deliver the minerals into the bone and so on. Yeah, it's a very newly discovered nutrient and newly researched nutrient. He called it the Price Factor or Activator X, and he died before he was able to fully research the nutrient. And today there is actually there's a book about it now. More and more research is being done on vitamin K2. And again, it's another nutrient that is going to be in the animal fat, especially if the animals have been out on pasture, grazing on grass and basking in the sun. So this is a very, very important nutrient. And unfortunately, you know, because we're eating factory farmed animal foods and we're not eating enough animal foods, we're very deficient in this very important nutrient.
All right. So what else? What other key characteristics do we find in primitive diets that we should apply to our own modern diets?
Well, all of these cultures contained salt in the diet. So today, of course, we have a salt-phobic society, and it's very unfortunate because salt is very necessary for so many different bodily functions, including for our digestion. So if you have salt phobia, please overcome it, because an average adult probably needs about a teaspoon and a half of salt per day in the diet. One of the things that salt will do in terms of helping the digestion is we need the salt in the diet in order to help produce something called hydrochloric acid in our stomach. And we need our stomachs to be acidic in order to help break down protein. So it's very, very important to have salt in the diet. And plus, it makes our food taste so much better. So enjoy your salt.
And I mean, I know we have Canadians are worried now about the amount of salt in their diet with all the packaged and processed foods, the amount of salt.
But your listeners don't eat packaged foods, right?
Right. I was going to say, but if I cut out the packaged processed foods, there goes all my salt. So I better make sure I get some salt then.
Yeah, when you're making food from scratch, of course, you have control over how much salt and the quality of the salt you put in your food. So, yeah, when you're eating food from the middle aisles in a grocery store, not only could they be high in sodium, but in all likelihood, there's going to be the artificial flavors in there, like MSG and aspartame, and those are the ones you want to avoid.
Now, in all traditional cultures, some sort of animal protein and fat was consumed. Fish and seafood, water and land fowl. I mean, we ate. There's no vegetarian society ever.
No vegan. No, there are no vegan societies.
None that have lasted anyway.
He hoped he could find one, but he didn't. And unfortunately, a lot of people today who have become vegan, and I know we talk about this on the show a lot because I'm a recovering vegan myself. I thought eating all those fruits and vegetables would be really good for me. And I had to learn the hard way, of course, that eating that way not only starves your nervous system, starves your brain. It's very, very hard on the digestive system, and it really does a number on your liver. So, we need the animal fats in the diet. There's no question about it. Our digestive systems are designed, basically primarily to break down animal fat and animal protein, hence the hydrochloric acid in the stomach and bile that is produced through the liver.
But as well, and I didn't know this, now I don't mind, some people are a little turned off, some animal products are eaten raw. I'm like, and I don't mind, there's certain things. I love oysters. I have no problem with sushi. Seafood raw. Other products, I'm like, I don't know if I'm eating my chicken raw. But
no, I wouldn't eat chicken. No,
but
don't
some things are eaten raw, though. Raw dairy, though. I mean, you're a big proponent of raw milk.
Absolutely. But there's foods that should be cooked, I feel, and that is things like chicken, turkey, beef. We invented fire a long, long time ago, Tom, and some researchers actually think that after we invented fire and started cooking some of our foods, that this helped enable the softening of the protein in the food, which improved our assimilation of the food and therefore helped our brains grow. So the other benefit of cooking foods like steak or chicken, what have you, of course, is the aroma, the smell. It smells outstanding. You walk into the house and you're cooking up steak or something like that. You just smell that wonderful smell. You release endorphins in your brain, and that's
so even
part
though,
of the eating experience.
All right, so even though he says some are eaten raw, most should not be eaten raw.
Well, it depends. I mean, like there's raw dairy, eggs in many cultures are eaten raw. That's not unusual. Raw fish, oysters, things like that. But I think, the staples like lamb and, red meat in general, chicken, turkey, I think those foods should be cooked, yes.
We're also, and we've talked about this a number of times, we're fat phobic. I mean, if there's fat, we want fat-free everything. We want to get rid of it. And it's like, no, hold on a second. It's not the fat. We have to have a healthy amount of fat in our diet. That is, because every cell relies somehow on fat in terms of being. So where should I get my fat from? Just the animal fats? Because I'm eating a steak, I have animal fat present?
Right. And you got to watch because, this is a good point, simply because there's so many lean meats on the marketplace and our ancestors never ate lean meat ever. I mean, they'd be rolling over in the graves if they thought we were eating lean and low fat foods, because when we were hunter-gatherers, for example, if we killed a lean animal, that's the meat that we would feed to the dogs. We wouldn't eat that meat because we knew that lean meat would give us a tummy ache, because we need the animal fat in the protein in order to assimilate the protein and also the minerals. So you want to make sure that if you are cooking meat, if it is lean, you probably want to cook it with some butter or some lard or something like that, so that it makes it more digestible and tastier on top of that.
All right. And final point before we go, and this goes back, traditional cultures consume animal bones. However, not just gnawing on a bone like a dog, through the use of bone broths.
That's right. Every culture used bone broth. And they knew to use every part of the animal. And so throughout history, if you look at cookbooks, for example, you'll see that there's always a section in the cookbook called for the invalids, for the sick people. And always when we were sick, especially the sick, we would get bone broths to help heal that individual. And
so what is it in the
person? They're great, but for a sick person, they're really, really important.
Okay, so what is it in the bone broth that helps our body? What is in there that I'm looking to consume?
Well, there's things like the gelatin, which helps us with the digestion of the food. It helps strengthen the digestive tract. There's things like collagen, chondroitin. There's minerals in there. So it really is a very wholesome food. But what it's doing essentially, Tom, is it's helping to seal and heal the gut lining. And since about 80% of our immune system is the actual lining of our gut, Bone broth is incredible medicine. It's just something that, you know, my clients consume bone broth every single day. They make their chicken stock or their beef stock or their fish stock. Usually it's chicken or turkey because those are everybody's favorites. But they sip on their bone broth every single day because part of the reason why they're so sick is because they've done so much damage to their digestion. And bone broth is one of the best medicines for that area of the body in particular.
Pam, always a pleasure. I have a turkey carcass in my freezer that I will put to use tonight.
Good stuff. And I'm doing my digestion class, part one, part two, starting April 30th. And I have information on my website. So since your gut is your second brain, it's very, very important to take care of your digestion. So make sure you're all enjoying your bone broths.
Thanks, Pam. Have a great week.
Thanks, Tom. Take care.
59 minutes after 11 o'clock. Quick break on the program.